Welcome back to the podcast. Our guest today is Ollie Morehouse, the managing director of Menspire and a big men's mental health advocate. The three topics we discuss today are fatherhood, Menspire, and health anxiety, all topics that are very dear to Ollie's heart. Enjoy the episode, and if you want to get in contact with Ollie, all his information will be down below. Woo.
So my name's Ollie Morehouse. I don't really ever know what to say what I am. I think I like to say I'm a hairdresser, I'm a businessman, I'm a husband, I'm a father, I'm a son. I'm pretty much just a normal bloke, really. I've got a pretty cool kind of job. I've got an amazing family. I've got a great network of people around me. I get to surround myself with some really inspiring people every day that keep me on the straight and narrow. And essentially, you know, I spend a lot of my time mentoring young men and ultimately seeing many different personalities, learning a lot about different people and understanding people's characters, all alongside trying to do the same thing with myself. Mm. You know, I'm 32 now. Like I said before, I'm a father, I'm married, I am a family man is probably, you know, I think it's quite an easy term to chuck around to say that you're a family man. But my full focus, I can say with all my heart, is that every day is about, you know, whether it's about pleasing your family or providing for your family, everything is based around, you know, what my son sees of me and what my wife sees of me. So I think, that was quite jumbled how I said all of that. But I think sometimes when you try and explain who you are to someone, it is a bit like that. And I think that gives quite an honest reflection of where I'm at, really. Like,
any standout stories or conversations you've had while cutting people's hair that sort of come back to you at first thought when I asked
that question? Do you know what? It's mad you say that, bro. I speak to my dad on the phone most days, right? And I spoke to him this morning. And we were talking about how... this is going to sound ridiculous, like context-wise. But like... we're going to talk about health anxiety, so maybe we should say like health anxiety here, but like whenever I had a doctor sit in my chair, it's just like stand out to me. Like, obviously there's loads of amazing stories, like really cool ones, like, oh, I cut this footballer, or I cut this musician or actor, blah, blah, blah. There's loads of like really cool stuff, but something that really sticks out to me, and I literally said to my dad this morning on the phone, I was like, do you remember when I used to get a doctor sit in my chair and I'd personally save their number? And it was just like, I don't know how open I could talk, but some people get a number and they're like, oh, I'll save that phone number. I'll call that number when I need it. Yeah, say no more.
On speed
dial. For me, it was class. When I got a doctor, I was like, oh my God, I've got a doctor's number in my phone. And then I'd ring them. I'd fucking text them and ring them and... Oh, just like looking back at it, it just makes me laugh. So if that's my stand-up moment with a client, it's an example of something that was funny and humorous back in the day.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, like, for many people, right, talking to a doctor is just talking to a doctor.
Yeah.
For me, with health anxiety and what it is and kind of the OCD side of things, like, even being near a doctor can be a thing. I know that might sound bonkers, and there'll be people that see this, like, and I'm very aware of that are in my clientele now that might not know or don't know this side of my personality so much. But, you know, some people talk about OCD, right? And they go, yeah, I've got OCD. And I go, yeah, whenever my aftershave bottle's on the side, I always move it so it's square. Like, I've got OCD. And you think, yeah, I suppose that is a form of OCD. But, you know, being obsessive and compulsive about something, There's no limits to that, right? And I think, absolutely, like, you can get to, yeah. I mean, me sat with a doctor is a recipe for a disaster. So if one of you say, like, oh yeah, I've got a medical degree, you're going to get fired.
I think many men treat the barbershop almost as a form of therapy.
Yeah.
Why do you think men see the barbershop as a place where they can be open with others?
I think generally speaking, men and women see it like that.
Yeah.
I think, like, I know we're focused on men's here, but I think, like, I think someone to come so close to your personal space, I think, like, people underestimate that a little bit. You know, like, going for a haircut is one thing. You get your hairs cut shorter. Yeah, that's obvious.
Yeah.
But as a guy, if I stood up now and started holding one of your hairs and like picking up your hair, I'm close to you guys. I'm in your personal space. It would be awkward, right? But there's a guard that you let down at the door of a barbershop that this guy is going to come over and he's going to pick my hairs up and he's going to cut them shorter. And that's not even getting towards kind of like the trust element of someone changing your appearance or having all that control, handing over all that control to someone. You have to trust them. And I think like there's obviously the technical trust. You want to hope they're going to give you a good haircut. But I think, you know, that half an hour, it's very rare in life that you have, and obviously we're doing a podcast, so we've got an hour to sit here and talk. But to have half an hour with someone that you don't know that well most of the time, isn't necessarily your friend or known that much about you as a client, in your personal space, touching you, touching your hair, talking to you about, you know, frankly, whatever you want to talk about. And I think, like, you know, for a client, that's quite a nice thing, yeah. Especially if, you know, we try and create a culture at Menspire where it is a safe space for people. And it is a place where people can be open with us and converse, because I know that I lead by example in that with my younger teams. Like, they see me talk to my clients about all kinds of things. Mm. Don't get me wrong. I like to keep it respectful and kind and all the things that their needs for the customer service element. And I don't want to talk about things that are necessarily uncouth in the shop and things like that. But if someone opens up to me, I'm going to talk to them. You know, if someone says to me, oh, you know, a lot of my clients I've cut for a long time, and they'll sit in my chair and they'll be like, you're right today. And we've kind of got this like open conversation within the salon at all times where if someone's not feeling good, I would expect them to tell me that. And I'd really hope that, you know, that's not just the staff, that's also the clients, because, you know, there's an amazing atmosphere in a men's spa salon. Obviously, you've been to the shop, Tom. Like, there's no music playing. It's calm. It's relaxed. It's fashion focused, definitely. We're there to give you like great haircuts and make you feel and look good. But also, we talk a lot about our culture being a place where our wives, our mums, our sisters, and I'm talking about clients, I'm talking about women, plural, can come and sit in and be comfortable in the environment. You know, like, don't get me wrong, that's not like something we push. It's not like you have to bring your wife for a haircut. That's not what I'm saying. But I always remember I was in Jordan once with Sam, right? Jordan in the Middle East. And I was talking about, we're basically, there was a franchise of men's spa opening over there. And trying to explain to someone a feeling is really, really hard. Trying to explain to someone that you don't know how you want someone to feel in your building, in your business, is a really hard thing. And I remember saying, like, you need to create an atmosphere that you'd be happy for your mum and sister to feel comfortable in. And I think that just kind of sums it up a little bit. Like, you know, if I think about when I used to go to the hairdressers or barbers when I was a kid, I think of music pounding or like a horrible film on the telly, or swearing, or talking about girls, or drugs, or partying, or you know, almost like you walk into an atmosphere where you kind of have to be like, oh, there's kids there, shush, shush. Like, that doesn't happen in a men's spa because we've done it in a way where the feeling you walk in there, you leave, you feel great. Like, I love being in there because, don't get me wrong, like, we're a group of lads that all work together. And there's times where we do look at each other and go, all right, cool, let's stop that conversation sort of thing. Obviously, yeah, that's normal.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, if my mum called me and said, Oles, I'm in, I don't know, Nottingham. I'm popping into Men's Spire for a coffee. There'd be no part of me that thinks, oh, I hope she doesn't see anything she doesn't like. Mm. And that's a nice feeling. And I think that trust begins there. Mm. You know, like from someone coming into the shop for a haircut, that trust comes because they can feel that they're surrounded by good people and everyone in there has got everyone's best interests at heart.
I love that. Mm. That safe space that you created for yourself, has it ever been a challenge for you where you're going through a dark time? How hard is that to then go into that space and create that safe space for your clients?
Yeah, that's a pucker question, man, because I think about it a lot myself. Like, I there's both sides of that. There's also the times where I'm not in the salon and how much I think, oh my God, I could really just do some time in the shop. Mm. Like, I cut hair probably 2.5-3 days a week in the salon right now, but I'm in the salons 5 days a week, but whether I'm cutting hair or not. But things like when I go on holiday, I miss the strength that I take from the salons, definitely. 100%. I think, like, you know, the feeling that I get from being surrounded by people that have the same kind of goals as me is really, really important. And I think, like, the minute you take that away, even short term, I feel a bit unhinged. So that's one side of looking at it. But then the times where I'm having a tough time and I'm in the salon, yeah, I think it's really hard. I think it's probably the hardest part of what I do is that, really, because, you know, I am the boss or one of the bosses. So it's kind of my job to keep these younger guys, not all younger, but young guys and men like-minded to me. It's my job to keep them feeling inspired. But I feel like sometimes actually a bit of transparency from me and actually having a bad day is okay. And you know, we've just had a few bits going on in one of the salons recently, and it was really tough. It knocked me for absolute six. And everyone that comes to the shop knows me. They know my character. That's the lads that work there, the people that get their haircuts. They're all just local people in the community, know what I'm like. They know my character. They know when I'm not having a good time. And I think, you know, unfortunately, I'm a big personality that if I'm having a good day, the whole salon will have a good day. Yeah. And if I'm having a bad day, I can curse it, and I know I can. And I think sometimes I just have to speak to the people around me that are, you know, that run the shop, if you like. Because I don't like to think of myself as the person who runs the shop. There's lads in there that do a lot more than me at running the shop. And I'll say to them, I'm having a tough day. Give me a wide berth. But, you know, I'm also, you know, I'm soft. You can probably see, like, even talking, like, I'm a soft person that will, if I'm feeling low, I'll wobble. And you know, when you're cutting someone's hair, that doesn't just go away. Mm. Just because they're paying for your haircut. If they say to you, having a bad day, yeah, I'm having a bad day. What's going on? Oh, this is going on. Like, I'm not going to hide it. And I'm very, very content and at peace with a tear in my eye when I'm saying that. Like, it's not something that I'm necessarily trying to... it's not something that I'm trying to, like, be away from. I'm good with being open about where I'm at.
Have you always been that way?
Yeah.
So that's a really rare thing, because Tom and I speak about this a lot. It's the softer side of you, which I think Tom and I definitely have.
Mm.
And I've had to work on that. I've had to work on having my guard down and being open to my friends and my family and even people like Tom.
Mm.
But you've been like that since you can remember.
I think so. Yeah, I think so. I think, I'm definitely, like, I'm complex, man. I'm complex, but I'm definitely not embarrassed to cry.
Love that.
Like, at all. I could, like I don't get me wrong. Like, I watch the TV and something will make me feel emotional. That's normal.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, you know, if I talk with passion, you know, and I think, like, I don't mean I'm so passionate. But what I mean is I wear my heart on my sleeve. And if I'm in a conversation, like, I had a meeting with one of my business partners a couple of weeks ago, and it was heavy, you know. We had some big stuff to talk about. But if tears go into my eyes, I'm not going to be the sort of person that, like, oh, I've got hay fever, I'll cry. I'm a crier, man. And I think I don't think that's a negative thing, really. I think it can definitely, you know, it shows vulnerability to a certain extent, and I think that's fine. It's, as much as anything, you just be a bit annoyed. Do you know what I mean? Like there's times where, like, at my son's nativity play last week, I was, like, sat in the front. There's, like, all the dads, yeah. You know what I mean? And I'm just, like, bawling my eyes out. Even my missus looks at me. She's like, are you all right? I was like, but you know what? Like, if that's a character for, I'm good with that. Like, if that's something that I can go, oh, but maybe I wish I didn't cry so much. It's not a big deal. Like, it's not something that phases.
So you feel a lot.
Yeah, I feel a lot.
Yeah,
I feel too much, actually.
Yeah.
I think.
Good and bad.
Yeah. I think, like, I'm very inquisitive. I'll never forget, I had a client who said to me, you've got such an inquisitive mind. And, like, you know, inquisitive mind can mean many things, but I think, like, I'm kind of like, everything that I do, I break down so much into such little parts. And I think, you know, in many things, in work and in therapy or whatever, it's positive. But then there's a lot of things that is just overthinking, and it can just completely...
Big time.
Oh, my God, man. It can wear you thin, bro. You know, like, even like, I reckon I text Tom four times before today. What's the location? What time are we starting? And, like, ironically, last night, he just, like, swiped his message from 2 weeks ago when I asked him before. But my mind doesn't work like that. I don't think to go up, I need to ask again. And and like, you know what? Like, for a long time, I would battle with that. Like, I would battle with that. I would try and edit it, and I would try. And then you get to an age where you kind of think, you know what, like, I'm good, man. Like, if this is bad, then fucking hell. Like, I'll take that as bad. Mm. Like, sorry, Tom, to text you loads. But, like, who cares?
He messaged me being like, can he go away?
Yeah, this guy. You know, this guy's a fucking demon, man. He's just a hairdresser. Why is he... Yeah. That's fine.
I wanted to ask you, do you think that the power struggle and the authority side of things, do you reckon that's why it affected you so much at school when you had to look into everything and question everything that was being asked?
Yeah, I think at school, I was just... All these things that have come to the surface, if you like, in my adult life, were just like bubbling at that point. Mm-hmm. I don't think I was really doing anything different to anyone else at school. I was just a nightmare at school, man. I just didn't care. I was always like really respectful and I believe kind. I'm sure I had errors in my character at some point, but like I was never like a nasty person. I was just a bit of a nightmare. Mm-hmm. I was erratic. I was up and down. I suppose like loads of ADHD traits. But the authority thing, no, man, I, if you're asking about my authority, are you asking about like,
well, it's more just like looking into things so much and questioning why someone's telling you to do your algebra and your times 10 tables, you know what I mean? And you're thinking, but why am I going to be doing this when I don't need it?
I think I was just disobedient actually.
Yeah.
To be honest, I'd love to give you like a cool answer there and trendy, but I think like, actually I would think I was just a bit of a dick. Mm. Do you know what I mean? But then I think most people were at that age, and I think, you know, I'm definitely the one thing I did like about school was authority, to be honest.
Interesting.
Don't get me wrong. Someone saying to me, do your algebra, like you said, no, I don't want to do algebra. Yeah. But if he says, tuck your shirt in, I'm tucking my shirt in. Like, I definitely wasn't a douche. Like, I think, like, I hear so a lot in my industry, you hear people hammering school and going, oh, I didn't need school. I didn't need this. If I go to my son's, you know, obviously I've got the flip side now. I've got a little boy. If I go to his parents' evening, and his teacher says he's unbelievable at maths. He's so clever, but he's really rude to the assistant in the class, or he's nasty to... I could not give a toss about his maths. Mm-hmm. If I go and they say he's really struggling with his maths, he's not that good at English, but he's so kind and he looks after...
You're winning.
Like, yeah. And I say that with complete transparency. Like, you know, I think... the only thing that I want him to come out of school with is respect for authority, being punctual, and being kind. And you know that's the only thing I want from school, to be honest.
I love that.
What's it like being a dad?
Oh, dude. Yeah, I mean, look. Here's what I'd say about it, is I'm very fortunate that... I'll just take a breath.
Take your time.
Yeah, my wife is... She's solid, do you know what I'm saying? She's pretty, like... I feel like sometimes I do her injustice and I go, no, she's just good. She's one of those lucky people that's just good in her head the whole time. But she is. She, you know, she's balanced. She's exactly that. And she gives, you know, a stability, if you like, to our household that I think makes my job easier. Do you know what I'm saying? Because I can kind of dip in and out. I can kind of do men's spy. I come home, play football in the garden, do WWE on the bed, and then put him to bed. Do you know what I mean? So like,
it works.
Right now, my part of being a dad's amazing, bro. Like, it's so special. It's I mean, definitely a challenge. I think we're kind of like programmed as guys that the mum obviously births the baby physically, and then you have this baby in your arms and all your problems go away and you fall in love with the baby and everything's happy and that's it for the rest of your life. And I'll never forget it. Like, and I've probably never said this like out loud, but I remember them giving me Bodhi when he was born. I looked at him and I was like, what do I do? Like, what do I do here? But
and don't drop him.
Because like, I'm not that, like, I mean, obviously, I'm not maternal. I know that's the female version. Paternal. Like, it doesn't come naturally to me, I have to be honest. But I remember thinking, well, hang on a sec. So I've got this little boy, I've got beautiful missus, lovely house, a child called Bodhi, which is such a rad name. Like, he's amazing.
Yeah, that's the thing, actually.
In my hand, I'm thinking, this is where all my problems are going to go away. And then you wake up the next day, day two, And the same kind of thoughts that were there before are still there. And it's kind of quite a scary feeling, really, because then you're thinking, oh my God, I've navigated it this far for me. And then a little bit for me and Karina, my wife. And then now I've got to be a dad and navigate it as well. So, yeah, I mean, bro, being a father is like the biggest blessing in the world. It's like, it's the best thing ever for me. You know, doing it with Karina, as being a parent with Karina, is special. It's amazing. We're a good team, man. But I'm still learning every single day. Like, I think, you know, it sounds very cliche to say that, but, you know, I'm a tough fucking character. I'm complex on my own, let alone then having to be a dad as well. And there's so many things that I said to you guys before. You know, I'm so protective of Bodhi slipping into things that I might have slipped into as a child, or seeing things that perhaps I don't want him to see and hearing things that I don't want him to hear. And, you know, I think that experience has taught me that a lot of my traits that I struggle with day to day now are from being when I was younger. And I think, like, for Karina and I trying to navigate it together, giving Bodhi a, you know, he gets to his, I kind of talk a bit of like just him being on zero when he gets to 18, like not in minus. Do you know what I'm saying? And I don't get me wrong, I don't mean that as it sounds. I don't mean that in being in minus is going to be terrible if he is, but getting him to kind of 16, 17 with minimal trials and tribulations is what I'm after. Yeah. Because I think that as society, we're a lot more aware of this stuff now, thank God. And I think, you know, as parents, you know, bless her, Karina's lived with me, man, since we were 18. So for her, that must have been super tough. And I think that, you know, at the same time, she's got the patience of a saint. She also understands. She's an understanding person that I think is super, super on the mission with me to make sure that Bodhi kind of comes out unscathed.
Absolutely. I talk about this quite a lot with my girlfriend. Mm. And for those of you watching that can see this, I almost see it as like a wavelength thing. And I go up, my highs are high, my lows are low, my highs are high, my lows are low. Mm. Meg's a constant. She'll drop down and she'll go up and she'll drop down. Mm. But having her as a constant in a relationship brings my peaks and troughs a lot smaller.
Yeah.
And I think it's one of the key things in a relationship, which I didn't realize I was missing for myself, is someone who sort of can tolerate when you're at your lows and tolerate when you're at your highs.
Yeah.
And see it from their point of view and be there to, you know, minimize that in a way, is honestly one of the biggest godsends.
Oh, mate, a million percent. I think, like, there was times in my life, not even that long ago, probably two or three years ago, that I used to like kind of joke with Karina and be like, come on, man, like, let's be a bit more spontaneous. Let's do this last minute. Let's do that, blah, 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 blah. And I used to kind of like sort of semi like take the piss. Like, it's in my character to just wind her up a bit and say to her, like, how are you happy just like chilling on a Friday night watching a movie? Like, why are you, you know, I would want to go to some flash restaurant in the West End. She's content with fish and chips on the sofa. And I think, like, if you take from that exactly as it sounds, like, there's like, I admire it, to be honest. Like, I would, for me, like, to be able to just be kind of chilled and flatline makes it sound negative, but constant is a nice way of putting it. Like, I envy her for that. Mm. And I envy many people. You know those people that you go, like, they tell you a story and I'm like, are you not worried about that? And they're like, well, no, it's all right. We'll figure it out. And I'm sat there thinking, what?
You're worrying for them.
Dude, yeah, dude, yeah, yeah, 100%. Yeah. Like, it's like, you know, it applies to so many areas of my personality. Like, food's a big one. Like, I will sit on the sofa with Karina and I always use this as the example. And she'll like walk in, fridge, one bit of Galaxy, eat it with her cup of tea. And she'll be like, oh, that was really nice. And I'm looking at her thinking,
where's the rest of the bar?
I'm thinking, who does that? Like, so weird. Like, but really, in the last, probably in real recent times, I realized, like, oh my God, like, how nice to just have that balance. Mm. How nice to have that. And I think, like, you know, going to the gym three times in a week, and there's loads of examples, doing things like normal, I suppose.
A steady state.
Yeah,
you need
steady.
It.
It's just nice. I'd love that. Sure. But I'm getting better. Like, you know, I think I'm quite hard on myself. I'm so easy to say, oh, I'd love to be like this. Or I want to. I'm getting better at it. And I think, like, you know, I owe her a lot for that.
Absolutely.
Do you think you've used your growing up and your youth, potentially, as a way to parent Bodhi in a better way that you might not have had when you grew up? Do you think you've used that?
Yeah, I think, like, it's a really hard one, isn't it? Like, I mean, everyone in their life goes through stuff, right? And I think when we're kids and we think about our parents, you think of them as, like, older and going through things that you might one day have to go. And then 15 years later, you're exactly the same. Yeah. Do you know what I'm saying? Mm. Like, I think back to, like, being a kid, thinking about my parents as, like, one day I'll be like that. And just so quickly you become that. So, yeah, I mean, is there decisions I'm actively and consciously making to protect Bodhi? Yeah, there is, man. There really is. I think, I've worked so hard in therapy, and there's so many things that come up from my childhood. And that doesn't mean that there was any errors in my childhood, but there's things that going from a level of understanding of that I will definitely try and put an influence on Bodhi's, definitely. But, you know, I'm sure there'll be things that I miss because I'm not perfect, and neither is Karina. But if you're asking me what those things are, I try really, really hard to give him a very kind of, not even cotton-walled aspect on things, but I don't give him too much detail on things he doesn't need detail in. Mm. And I think, like, I forget what the expression is. I'm not even going to try and reel off a quote here, right? But, like, having too much information can be really, really negative. Like, really negative. And I think, like, there was things in my childhood, overstimulated, man. Like, I can be overstimulated even now by conversations. Mm. And I think, like, when you've got that young, pure mind that has got nothing but pure intention and admiration for his parents, Bodhi, looking at me, if I say something to him, he's going to take it as absolute gospel. And I think, like, I try really hard to just kind of never kind of jade his views on things, let him kind of figure stuff out. I mean, he's four. Let's not get it twisted. He's four. He's into Play-Doh, a little bit of football, and listening to, like, one song on repeat for, like, 3 months, right? So, like, there's not much jeopardising his views right now. But am I actively, consciously making decisions to protect him? Yeah, I am. Yeah.
Absolutely. You talked about your... traits earlier. I know you suffer with health anxiety. Mm. I'd love to touch on that. Is that something you try and hide from Bodhi, or are you going to educate him when he grows up about what's going on in your
health? So I think health anxiety is quite hard to talk about because a lot of people hear things about health anxiety. I mean, there's a lot of stuff in the press last year, like big names like Lewis Capaldi and people like that talking about health anxiety, and kind of everyone's reaction was like, well, I've got health anxiety too. I've got health anxiety. Everyone's got it. You know, everyone's got anxiety. Everyone's got areas in their personality. It's normal to have, right? But, you know, there's worry about your health, like everyone should do, and be conscious and be aware and be anxious about symptoms that they notice. Yeah, I think that's quite normal. But I think, like, the uncontrollable aspects of health anxiety that is very closely linked to OCD is where it becomes kind of a whole different thing. You know, what I'm basically saying is that, like, frankly, it's normal for you to be concerned about your health. You know, most people are. There's some people that aren't, but most people have a worry about their health when they're unwell or they spot something different in their body. That's normal. Mm. And the difference between that and someone who suffers with health anxiety, you know, to a chronic way, is that, you know, every single thought that enters your head when you're in a state of whatever you want to call it, trauma, manicness, whatever it is, when you're in an episode of health anxiety, there's not a single thing that goes through my head other than health anxiety and being negative and being concerned that I'm really, really poorly. And, you know, I think people's kind of, there's not much, like, speak about health anxiety. There isn't much conversation about it. And I think, like, don't get me wrong, we're in a place now where mental health is, like, a huge conversation the whole time. Like, I literally feel like I talk about it at least once a day with someone, right? But then you say to someone, oh, so they go, oh, so what's your thing? Because everyone's got a thing, right? Everyone in the world, everyone, men, women, everyone's got a form of mental health, whether it's good, bad, ugly, whatever. Mm. But health anxiety is niche, man. Like, and even like I'm sat here now as someone that's had it, suffered with it, whatever you want to word it right. My therapist will watch this, so I've got to word things right, so I can frame it the right way. But like, everyone in the world has their own versions of these things, and it's how intense it becomes and how much it takes over your regular health and your regular life. And, you know, I was kind of, I remember from a really young age, man, like when I was younger, my granny was very poorly, I just remember being young thinking, oh my God, is that what happens? Like my thought process was like, is that what happens when you get ill? You know, X becomes Y, and very quickly, you know, you lose everything and you get really sick and get really skinny and all this scary stuff. And then very quickly you kind of get to your, like, I remember being at school and we had this guy come in and talk about testicular cancer, right? And he did this like session in assembly, if you like, we're like 14. And like everyone was kind of like, oh, that was good as we left. That's good to know. And I was like, yeah, that was good to know. And I remember just like from that day, I was like, well, everything he said, I can feel that, or I can do that. And then I'd like self-diagnose myself with this thing. And obviously different age, less kind of stresses were running alongside that. So it was nipped in the bud quite quickly. Went to the doctors, got checked, it was fine. Yeah, obviously. But then you kind of add in being a grown up and the stresses that run alongside normal life and this kind of trigger within me that when things aren't going right on the outside, these feelings come on the inside. And oh my God, I mean, I've said to you before, Tom, when I cut your hair, like I reckon I've had every single cancer in the world. And like, I say that with a smile on my face. I don't even mean it in a chippy way, but like I've had every illness you can possibly have at some point. And we're not like talking a loose thought of like, oh, I think I might have this. Right? We're talking like obsessive. I mean, convince myself is not even about convince myself. I've got it. And like, you know, I kind of use the kind of drug addict analogy a little bit on it because it's the only way I can really explain it. But like, I'll get this thought and I will lock myself in a room, genuinely, on a laptop, watching TV videos about it and completely and utterly study the hell out of it and get all this information, you know, I spoke about getting to, and be completely and utterly focused that's what's happening with me. And the unfortunate thing with it is that in many kind of anxiety symptoms, etc., you can kind of seek therapy and see a GP and have your mind put at ease that you know, it's going to pass and la, 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 la. But unfortunately with health anxiety, you can't sit in a room with someone that says to you, no, this is never going to happen to you. And I know that applies to a lot of life, but like the uncertainty is something you have to actually find peace with and understand, because the chances are one day I may well get poorly. I may well get some of these things that I'm so petrified of now. And I think like that's why me being active with therapy and speaking to my therapist as regularly as possible when I really, really need her is important, because actually just like talking and even like this, talking and like kind of building like breaking the walls on it a little bit are really important. But it is the sort of situation where no one could say anything. When I'm bad, and I mean bad, I use the term manic, right? I mean, manic refers to bipolar more, and I don't have bipolar, obviously, thank God. But when I am in an episode of health anxiety, which can be a day or it can be 3 months or it can be 6 months, there's nothing that anyone says around me that can make me stop doing what I'm doing. And when you're 18 and it's new, that's really, really scary, like seriously scary. I'm now 32 and I've been through a lot of these episodes, if you like, and I know and understand now that it will pass. I still have boxes that I need to tick though when I'm doing it, because for example, I had a situation not that long ago, to be honest, where I had this like lump thing on my jaw here, and it completely spun me out. Like, I'm talking normal. A normal person would react to that and be like, oh, what's that? That's a bit odd. But we're talking like properly bad. Like, went to hospitals, like went like, I had 4 private GP appointments in a week. Like, that's a lot of money as much as anything. Mm. Just like completely just wraps me up. Nothing on the outside matters. Everything in here, I'm just like on this whole like intense. It feels it's not even something I can really remember what happens. It's so intense when it happens. And I'm kind of sat there thinking, oh my God, well, this is it. This is it. This is what I'm going to do. And then you kind of get these moments of like, where you're like, I know this is going to pass. But what I need to do is X, Y, and Z. And then I can begin the kind of recovery process. Mm. Like, it sounds crazy. It must sound bonkers, but like going through it is so tough. And I remember it was like 3rd of October. I remember the day, it wasn't even that long ago. My mum was at my house looking after my son. I got home from work. And I don't even think I've told my wife this, to be honest. Like, I got home from work, my mum was looking after my son. She was like, are you okay? And I was like, no, this is really bad now. It's really bad. I basically like convinced myself that I had like horrendous illnesses, right? Mm. Lump here, checking my armpits, checking my groin, like all that horrible stuff that you just, you know, someone with no knowledge on medical stuff shouldn't be checking, because you dig, you find. It's as simple as that. Mm. And I remember my mum being like, she sat me down, she's like, enough now. She's like, what are you doing to yourself? Like, I was like very triggered, very tired, very just like manic. And I suppose like I'd been on like a bender, to be honest. And she was like, you need to go and see your GP ASAP. So I went in the morning. Even going for me is a massive thing. Mm. Although I hate it, but I have to go and la, 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 la. Went. Everything's fine, it's all good, it's stress, it's whatever it was, like a gland was like basically like stuff that most people would shake off. Mm-hmm. But it just put me into this absolute fucking spiral, guys. And I think like having to get the doctor to say you're okay, step one, speak to my therapist, step two, and then kind of like wangle my way out of it. Mm-hmm. And you know, fortunately I have the patience is probably the best way of putting it, to know that it's going to pass. But also now I have the kind of experience to know what's going to help me and guide me out of that. It's a hard one to even explain. I mean, do you guys have any experience with health anxiety?
That I'm aware of.
Yeah, like it's mental. It's bonkers. Like it really is bonkers, because when I'm good, like, and I'm good right now, I've been good for a few months, I kind of look at some of my behaviours when I'm, you know, worrying about my health, and I think, oh my God, like, why are you so worried? What are you so worried about? But it's easy to say when you're on the flip side.
Do you speak about it with anyone?
Yeah.
Like forums, WhatsApp groups, or people that come to you and
forums, I'm self-excluded from every forum in the whole world, man. Like,
for that exact reason, because otherwise...
Dude, like, the online is the worst place ever for someone with health anxiety. Mm. It really is. Probably, you know, I can only speak on behalf of health anxiety. I want to be really cautious with my words here, but like... It's so easy to Google, for example, oh, I've got a lump on my jaw and my armpit hurts. I mean, you are finished at that point. The minute you've written that in online, you are finished. Mm. So for me, no, I don't. I don't use anything online. I speak to people around me, because seeking for reassurance is quite a big part of health anxiety. It's quite a big part of anxiety in general, isn't it? Seeking reassurance. But you know, I'll kind of like be cutting someone's hair and I'll be like, this weird thing happened. You're not going to believe. And you're kind of waiting for someone to go, oh, no, that's all good. No, I've had that before. Don't worry about it. Mm. But then you get one person out of the day of your haircuts go, oh, yeah, I had a friend who had that. Oh, what happened to him? Oh. And then you think, oh, my God. And then your reassurance actually becomes the worst thing in the world.
How does having health anxiety... I know, because it's your personal experience. Mm. How does having a 4-year-old who's going to be ill a lot more than, say, you are, comes home from nursery with the sniffles again? Yeah. How does that manifest in that?
Funny,
or is it just
it's
you?
It's funny. It's interesting, because like people always think that it's kind of like germs and health related in that sense. Mm-hmm. Like, as awful as this sounds, I couldn't give a monkey's about getting a cold or a cough or any other viruses that happen. That doesn't give me any fear.
Interesting.
I think like the fear comes from... getting sick, like properly sick, losing your dignity, I suppose is the word, your control. It's deeper rooted than germs. Like,
okay.
you know, Bodie coming home with the sniffles or something like that. Don't get me wrong. Like, I want to make sure he's as healthy as possible. And I want to, you know, I try my best to that he, well, we try our best. He eats really clean. He eats really healthy. Try not to give him too much processed stuff. Obviously, we're not too neurotic with him, but we're focused on him being as healthy as he can be. But the kind of him coming home from school with stuff is something that I'm very chilled about. Even me, like, if I get a cold, I'm good. I'm fine. Mm-hmm. It's the kind of sinister stuff that I'm not as into.
You think stress and work pressures play a massive role in 100%. Anxiety?
Yeah, but I didn't know that until doing lots of work on myself because I think of health, or I used to think of having health anxiety was the symptom or was the cause, if you like. It was the health anxiety was the issue, is how I used to think of it. But it's actually not, to be honest. It's the, you know, it can the kind of timeline would be something major happens that triggers me into stress. Then I need something to worry about and it becomes health anxiety. It's not often. I mean, there's been occasions where there's been something that's, I've, like I said, about my neck, and I was like, oh my God. And then I freaked out and it went that way. But the majority of the time is that actually, yeah, I'm stressed, I'm tired. I'm triggered, if you like, by something. And then I react by being very anxious about my health. But, you know, I do what I can now as a 32-year-old male, husband, dad, someone that has responsibilities, to put myself in the strongest position I can be every day when I wake up to make sure that I don't have those low modes. Do you know what I'm saying? Because I think, you know, if I'm out partying every week, I'm going to be anxious. You know, so I made decisions about that area of my life, and I made decisions about being healthier with my food and my diet. I've recently lost quite a bit of weight and made some changes to my kind of lifestyle. Who I surround myself with is a humongous one.
Huge.
I protect myself and I protect my kind of my peace, my sleep, my all these things with everything. And, you know, I'm like maybe two and a bit years into like cold water most days.
Awesome, man.
Every day. I'm actually like, I say that as a bit of a porky at the moment. I've actually had 3 weeks off.
I'm
going to admit that to the room. But in normal times, yeah, I'm cold water every day if it's just a minute in my garden. And things like that that I know help me so much, I try my hardest to protect. And, you know, but the flip side of that is when you're in a bad spiral, it's very easy to self-destruct and be like, well, if I'm having a bad day, I'm not going to do that. So it's discipline, isn't it?
I might be wrong. Obviously, I'm no psychologist.
Oh, God.
A lot of what you said,
I am so far,
I can relate to. Yeah. And it, from what I've heard so far, it almost seems like a lot of the time you're in just this vicious cycle where with your ADHD, two of the main symptoms are hypersensitivity to situations and emotional dysregulation.
Yeah.
So jokers say something to me, I could feel it 5-6 times more than the average person. That causes me to spiral out, stress to build, and then a stressful situation could happen at work or at home or with a partner. And then from there, you're trying to mask a lot of things because you're going home to a four-year-old and you're trying to cover for him. And then that can lead to health anxiety. Do you see it as almost a vicious cycle?
No, I definitely do. I definitely do. I think one thing I'll say is that like I'm one of these adult undiagnosed ADHDers at the moment. I mean, I am the cardboard cutout of ADHD, right? I just am. And it's something that is on my list for the new year to kind of explore and get that kind of diagnosis, because I know that as much as anything, it will put a lid on something that I need a lid on. You know, I don't even want to talk about medications and things like that right now. It's not something that I'd necessarily for or against. I would look into it and explore it. But yeah, in what you say, like, you know, someone can say the smallest thing to me, man, and it will stay with me for the whole day. And when you've got a lot of people, for example, that like work for you, with you, that are your team, and one of them says one thing about one person and it will stay with me for the whole day. Or, you know, the sensitivity to certain topics can trigger me into like a whole kind of world of bother. And I think like things that I think about and worry about I would say, like, there's not another person in my life I could think worrying about the stuff I'm worrying about. Do you know what I'm saying? And, like, you know, that can be anything from, God knows, I mean, business stuff, money things, bank stuff, booking a flight, anything, you know, like, booking my appointments to come and be on a podcast with you guys. Like, everything I do, I have to answer questions. And I think, like, even some of my closest people get frustrated with me with that, you know, like, because it is hard. If you don't get it, it's really, really tough. I can't imagine how annoying it is, some of the things I do around the house. And I mean, let's be really honest here. Like, even before bed, I choose to go into my garden and get in a hot tub or a cold tub of water, and I sit in an ice bath before I go to bed, because I know it calms me down and it makes me sleep great, right? But to someone who's a constant, I love that, by the way, a constant, like my wife, she must think, bloody heck, like, he's got to do that to just go to sleep. Do you know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
And I think that must be quite hard work, especially for someone whose personality is relaxed. But you know, you are the kind of product of the people you spend most time with. Mm. And, I mean, my best mate is diagnosed ADHD. My other friends are similar characters to me, you know, maybe undiagnosed. Like, so, like, in many ways, there's a lot of positives to all these things that I'm slating in my character. I'm sat here going this. But actually, you know, being someone who is in touch with their emotion is something that I'm very proud of, and something that I use as a credit to myself every day. And being detailed, you know, then goes into my business and my work ethic and things like that. So, you know, I don't want to totally write myself off here. Like, I'm winging it. I'm still going and I'm doing all right. But, like, I think, you know, if you said to me today you could take this pill, and I don't literally mean medication, but you can swallow this pill and you can be a constant, would I take the pill? I don't know. I actually don't know if I would.
So I don't think you would.
No,
because
I don't know.
Your
if I would.
Wife,
I think I
your would wife either. Would thank you for getting in the ice bath before bath, because it'd be a nightmare if you didn't get in it.
Yeah.
So these things that you're doing to help yourself, she would say, "No, get in the ice," because you're a far better person to sleep next to when you do go in it versus when you don't. Yeah. So your colleagues at work, you probably wouldn't have Menspa if you didn't do those things.
Yeah,
so this neurodiversity that you've got makes you the person that you are, which makes you the good husband, the good father, the good work person to work with. All those great things that you have as a result of that, your friends would thank you for it as well. If you didn't have those things and swallowed that red pill, then they wouldn't be there.
But then there's the other question is, what about Bodhi? If I could, at this point, could I protect him forever on it? Yeah, I would. 100%. Like, it doesn't even enter a conversation for me. You know, if I think his personality is very much like me, right? And I think that there's things I can see already. He is very similar to me, but I really hope that because he's got my wife and me, I think she's
perfect balance.
Yeah, man. I hope so, man.
Perfect balance.
So. Let's see.
I wanted to ask you quickly on, because you mentioned therapy a few times.
Yeah.
As someone who's gone through therapy a few amount of times, I'd ask you what your key takeaways would be for anyone who's either thinking about starting it or in the process of doing it.
Yeah. Here's what I'd say. Different people react to different people. You know, like, someone that works for me might not work for you and vice versa. And I think, like, for a long time, I kind of threw money at it. Even when I was younger, when I couldn't afford to, I remember seeing this one guy on, like, Wimpole Street, and I was thinking, oh, my God, well, if he's up here, then he's obviously the man that I need to see. And I, like, sat looking out of his office window, like, literally like you see in the movies. And I thought, and then it didn't work. And I was like, oh, no, the guy that I've just spent my month's wage on, it didn't bloody work. But then, you know, I came across a lady that I was recommended. I was recommended her by an old colleague. And honestly, I think the first time I saw her, I was maybe 20 years old. And I'm 32 now, and I still speak to her probably at least once a week. Our relationship's definitely changed. You know, she's kind of a friend now. I still use her services. There's still a transaction, because I think that's really important. Yeah. When I'm, unfortunately, I've kind of in the last 12 months, I kind of got to this point where at the beginning of this year, I kind of probably was a little bit naive and thought, oh my God, I've cracked it. I'm good. And like, I think that's why the couple of rough times I've had this year have been maybe felt worse than before, or felt like the worst ones ever, that kind of thing. Because you know, therapy is a work in progress, and I think, like, you know, our physical health and mental health and life is a work in progress, right? So for me, it's just about, I use like Tekken. You guys are probably too young for Tekken, but like
it.
Keeping the power bar as high as possible is just the most important thing in the world. And I think, like, if you're running on zero and having therapy to get you halfway back to normal, that chips down real low. And I think just like keeping that therapy, even when you're feeling good, and this is a reminder to myself right now, to be honest, like even when you're feeling great, which in the last couple of months I felt amazing, I felt back to myself, having therapy in these times is probably just as important, if not more important, than when you're feeling low. But yeah, I think like my key takeaways from it is find someone that you know, or find someone that you like and that you trust. Find someone that's convenient. I don't necessarily think that online is the way to do it myself. Mm-hmm. That's just my personal preference. I make sure that I try and go to my appointment, because I think like the actual inconvenience in your day, going and making intention and blocking a part of your calendar out to do it is important. And I think, you know, keeping it regular and consistent, man. But again, big reminder to myself, even just saying all of that, I'm probably going to finish and
book an appointment.
Therapy.
Good, well said, mate.
Really well said. Amazing.